Hi, I'm Jeff Walters, and welcome to The Minutes. And thanks for listening today. It's great to have you along on The Minutes for the week of October the 21st, 2024. This is a City of Thunder Bay podcast. The Minutes takes a look at what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week. You can find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, including our YouTube channel and our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. On this episode, we'll have a rundown of what happened at this week's City Council meeting and an interview with Riley Willinan talking about encampments. There's a lot of discussion about a potential temporary village at Council on Monday night, and we'll hear all about it. But first, though, some recognition this week for City staff, as it is Employee Appreciation Week. There are about 2,000 employees at the City of Thunder Bay, and it's also Local Government Week. It's a chance for municipalities to show off their services and feature staff who made frontline contributions every day to the services that you use, like parks, water, garbage, or swimming lessons. Now, Council heard on Monday night about a restructuring taking place at the city, which starts on November the 4th. It includes the creation of a growth department. This is a two-year project. The creation of the new department means corporate communications, strategy and engagement, development services, and staff working with the Housing Accelerator Fund will be moved to the growth department. The focus of this department is to encourage growth in Thunder Bay. Kerry Marshall will be the commissioner of this new department, as with this reorganization, general managers will now be known as commissioners. As well, Matt Pearson has been appointed as the senior advisor of growth, who will support a task force that will create a growth strategy and action plan. The change also means a name change for infrastructure development and operations to infrastructure and operations. Kayla Dickerson will become the commissioner for this department. Superior North EMS will also move to community services as part of the reorganization. As well, the office of the city treasurer will become the finance department, and Andrea Morrison will become the director of finance. Again, all of these changes take effect on November the 4th. City Council approved some governance changes on how it makes decisions at its meeting on Monday night. The changes still need Council approval for a new procedural bylaw next year, and if those changes are approved, it will take effect in September of 2025. Right now, Council uses a committee of the whole system to make decisions. That means that all 13 members of Council sit as a committee to make decisions that are then sent to Council. The group is the same, but the type of meeting is different. In many municipalities in Ontario, a standing committee model was used, where a specific number of councillors sit on different committees that made recommendations to City Council. It means that each councillor does not sit at each committee. The Clerk's Office has completed research into the committee system, and the approval of the resolution on Monday was to continue with that work. Standing committees are committees of council that are focused on a major function of a municipality, like public works or finance. The committee plays a role in decision-making, and it reviews proposed policies and bylaws, and then makes a recommendation to City Council if the matter should go ahead. Now, in the case of Thunder Bay, the committees would be for setting policy, with the city manager and delegates overseeing operations on the city itself. Administration recommends creating three standing committees, being a standing committee of growth, a standing committee on finance and administration, and a standing committee on quality of life. Committee of the Whole would remain for closed session items or for larger scale items such as the proposed indoor turf facility. Now, each standing committee would have four members of council plus the mayor. If the size of council changes based on work being done by the Council Composition Review Committee, the amount of councillors on each standing committee would be adjusted. Administration says standing committees allow councillors to specialize in certain areas instead of requiring such a breadth of knowledge across all city departments and operations. This gives councillors more time to focus on the specific files of their standing committee. The idea also is that fewer members may also be able to provide more focused feedback before the matter goes to City Council, which will allow for more focused council meetings. It could also encourage more public participation, as the committees are smaller and not necessarily as intimidating as appearing in a committee of the whole. The standing committee could also decrease councillor workload, as there will be fewer advisory committees for councillors to attend. Now, on the contrary, if there are too many standing committees, councillors can again be overloaded with meetings. It can also lead to discussions at City Council either being drawn out with members that are re-debating what the committee has already spoken about, or items approved without council knowing all of the details. Administration notes that there needs to be a balance with the standing committee system. As well, this system can slow down decision-making, as proposals may need to go through multiple levels of review prior to getting to a city council meeting. Now, Thunder Bay has had standing committees before, from amalgamation until 1987. Since that time, Committee of the Whole has been broken into sections, but the entirety of council is at Committee of the Whole. The court's office reviewed communities in Ontario with more than 85,000 people and found that 8 municipalities had standing committees, while 4 had a Committee of the Whole system. Along with all of this work, the court's office will also review the number of advisory committees in Thunder Bay. Currently, there are 20, of which 4 are required by legislation. As well, the standing committee structure would allow for the creation of a consent agenda, where items like information reports and other matters that are adopted then as a group instead of individually. This is already done for bylaws at City Council. The next update on this project will come to Council in the second quarter of 2025. If that is passed, the changes will be in place for September of 2025. To help build more homes in Thunder Bay, housing grant applications are now available on the city's website. If you're a homeowner looking to add additional units like basement suites or backyard homes, or a developer looking into multi-unit housing, then these grants are for you. Apply today at buildthunderbay.ca. Council approved an additional $500,000 in funding for the Chippewa Park Carousel. The carousel, which is over 100 years old, needs a permanent structure over top of it to protect it from the elements. There was also discussion at Council about moving the carousel this week, but it was noted that some of the funding is based off of the carousel staying at Chippewa Park. Back in 2020, Council then approved a plan to apply for a $500,000 grant from Heritage Canada. The group awarded the city $450,000. In 2020, the carousel project was expected to cost about $1.6 million. And since that time, the cost of the enclosure has gone up to about $2.2 million. The Friends of Chippewa Park, a group that has advocated to preserve the carousel, has applied to FedNor for $250,000 in funding. That application is still outstanding. The province has also committed $800,000 to the project. However, that money is contingent on the project being fully funded by the end of November 2024. Administration recommended using $300,000 from the Municipal Accommodation Tax Fund and about $284,000 from the Renew Thunder Bay Reserve Fund to make up the difference in funding. Based on the change in cost and funding, the project is now 56% funded by external grants, 24% by Renew Thunder Bay, 13% from the Municipal Accommodation Tax, and the remainder from city capital funding. The city owns the carousel. And some good news, Thunder Bay. A second leaf and yard waste collection is coming on your regular recycling day between October the 29th and November the 8th. Leaves are falling now, so make sure that you use your craft paper bags to bag your leaves and bundle your brush with string or twine. There is no collection limit. If you have any questions, you can call City Dispatch at 807-625-2195 or visit thunderbay.ca/leafandyard. Council approved the creation of a designated encampment village on Monday night after a very lengthy discussion. There was a referral to approve an action plan and village in principle, but to direct administration and intergovernmental affairs to advocate for other levels of funding. Now that referral lost, and Council voted and passed the original resolution. The decision comes as Council also discussed at length the future of encampments in Thunder Bay. Council also received letters of support from the Thunder Bay District Social Services Administration Board, the Thunder Bay District Health Unit, St. Joseph's Care Group, Elevate NWO, Thunder Bay District Mental Health and Addictions Network, and Nujumuing Setrodian Health Team for the proposed concepts that were presented on Monday. Up to $5 million will be taken from the Renew Thunder Bay Reserve Fund to build a temporary village. City Council previously approved a funding cap of $4 million to deal with encampments by creating a temporary shelter area. An additional $1 million would be available to improve the area where the temporary shelters would be built. Administration says the site, which would either be at the Cam River Heritage Park or a parking lot on Miles Street, would be temporary. Administration says it will look for other external funding, but at the moment, city funding is all that is available for the temporary village. Up to 80 units would be built at the site on Miles Street at a cost of about $4 million. The Cam River Heritage Park site could host 100 units and would cost about $6 to $6.8 million to construct. At this time, operating costs for both sites are unknown, but administration says it would cap municipal contributions at $1.5 million annually. City administration says without the village, there would not be enough viable indoor options to reduce the number of encampments in Thunder Bay. The creation of the village is the cornerstone of the 10-point action plan on homelessness. The village is designed to be a short-term solution and relies on the increase of available housing in Thunder Bay and is designed to get people into stable housing. The village would have units that are prefabricated or modular with heat and cooling and power. There are also hygiene facilities and laundry facilities on site, as well as security and support staff. City administration says there are examples of successful village projects in Kitchener, Peterborough, and Vancouver, Washington. Most of these areas had about 50 units. The first phase of the project will be site design and initial site work, followed by acquisition of the units, building the site, and then finding an operator for the site. Administration will also create an evaluation system for the site and create a communication plan for the village. Finally, once the need for the site diminishes, the city will look at the best way to divest of the units and use the land for another purpose. The city will conduct an online survey, create materials for surrounding businesses, and meet with the Fort William BIA. As previously noted, when the report was brought to council earlier this month as a first report, the plan calls for a number of changes, including the creation of the temporary village, enhancing encampment cleanup, and creating an encampment response team. Council heard how there are now 200 people living unsheltered in the city. Earlier this year, council adopted a set of distance guidelines, establishing clear parameters as to where an encampment could be set up. Administration says in a report that the implementation of these guidelines had mixed results. There have been many successful encampment relocations based on the guidelines. However, some people in encampments are not willing to work with the group helping to enforce the guidelines, or some are unwilling to abide by the distance guidelines. There's also been a large increase in reports to the city's dispatch line regarding encampments. The plan does include continuing to advocate upper levels of government to address homelessness, getting more help from community partners, enhancing the cleanup and sanitation at encampments, and developing that temporary village to support up to 100 units. Now, people who live in encampments say they continue to have concerns about safety, noting that they were in support of a temporary village concept, and they did have concerns about feeling they would be on display if brought to only a few select locations. They also wanted to make sure that people who live on both sides of the city have input on the proposed villages. And finally, administration has requested a deferral for the Boulevard Garden and Maintenance Bylaw. The deferral will move the item to the November 25th council meeting. The delay is to allow the public more time to comment on the Get Involved survey and then time for administration to analyze feedback and consider other additional changes. You can learn more about the proposed Boulevard Garden and Maintenance Bylaw by visiting thunderbay.ca/get-involved. And that's a wrap as to what happened at council this week. For more information on anything that happens at council, please visit our website, thunderbay.ca/council. We've heard lots about encampments over the past year at City Hall. The creation of guidelines, talk about more permanent housing options, how Thunder Bay deals with the homeless population generates a lot of discussion. On Monday, administration gave council a bit of a roadmap on how encampments could be handled in the near future. It's a pricey concept. It just generated a lot of discussion around the council table. It's the creation of a village where people who are currently in encampments could live. Riley Willidan is the drug strategy specialist with the city, and she has been working on the encampments file. Riley, thanks for coming into the Minute Studio today.
Thanks, Jeff. Happy to be here.
A late night for you last night.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so I'm glad that you can make it. I'm glad that you can make it in today. If we go back a few months, there were encampment guidelines that were first approved by council. So that's kind of what kicked this all off, I think. How did those work?
So the guidelines have seen some really great successes. We've certainly used them through our community partner to support several successful relocations. There have been a very, very select few circumstances where perhaps the voluntary enforcement of those distance guidelines hasn't been so successful. So recognizing this and also that the numbers are continuing to rise, it's created quite a capacity overload on administration and our community partner to respond to all the numbers of complaints that have come in regards to the distance guidelines. We knew we had to do a bit more, so we've brought this enhanced approach, the 10-part plan that went to council last night, and then the temporary village, which is one part.
And I would say that probably the temporary village is probably the biggest piece of this, right? Is it, I think it's called the cornerstone, actually, of the plan?
Yep, it's very, very integral to the whole plan.
So what exactly exactly is the village concept and why are we doing this way?
So the temporary village concept is being seen more frequently in municipalities who are also grappling with very similar issues to us. Different models exist, but fundamentally most models have this following in common. Typically they're little mini cabins, so they're enough space to fit maybe a bed, a desk, a chair. Some have mini fridges, maybe a little shelf, something to that effect. It's a very, very small area. There's no washroom facilities within them. Those are externally located to the building, and they also have shower facilities within them. Some models have laundry on site. Most models also have some sort of a community room, possibly a community kitchen involved. They really are designed to be more stable, dignified living spaces that are supported with services to help people stabilize and then be able to move on to more appropriate housing options.
So there's a number of municipalities and communities that have these right across North America. Why are we doing with this concept then? Why are we recommending it?
So recognizing that housing is the ultimate goal, there's great successes being made by the Thunder Bay District Social Services Administration Board and other housing service providers. We also know that construction takes time, and people living on the street, people living in encampments, they can't afford to wait the time to have those housing options available. So this temporary village model, it's a rapid response measure to the crisis at hand. It is a temporary stopgap measure to get people out of tents and into something that provides them more stability, more security, with the ultimate goal of helping them transition into actual housing.
And where could this potentially go?
So administration has identified two lots. The first lot is 114 Miles Street East, and the second lot is Cam River Heritage Park. Both those sites were selected for a few reasons. One, their surface area is quite large, and so they can fit a large capacity of units, which we know we need because the numbers of people experiencing unsheltered homelessness in our community are very high. Second reason, the lots are located in downtown cores, which is where many supports and services that people experiencing homelessness are to access. And if you want people to have success in exiting the village and getting into housing, you need to make sure that they are in close proximity to the supports and services that they access. And the third reason being that a couple months ago, well, I guess almost a year and a half ago, sorry, a half a year ago, we did a public consultation on designated encampment sites. Those public consultation results, though a designated encampment and a temporary village are different, I want to be very clear that they are not the same thing. They are similar in that they are managed spaces to address the encampment's crisis. So in those public consultation results, what we saw was of the folks that were supportive of designating encampment locations, 82% were supportive of using a vacant lot for a designated site. And then I believe it was 48% were supportive of having a park without active programming as a designated site. So it is reasonable to extrapolate those results might transfer over to the similar support for a temporary village initiative.
Okay. Timelines or anything like that? I know obviously this was just spoken about last night, but, mm-hmm. but where are we looking for timelines?
So we are aggressively pursuing this. The goal is to have the village up and operating by the end of April. We fully recognize that that is an aggressive goal, but we also recognize that that is usually around the time when the numbers of people living unsheltered in our community really sharply rise. So if we want to have a chance of getting people into those more stable units, we really need to pursue this aggressively.
You were at council last night, and this was certainly a topic with a lot of discussion last night. What was kind of set around the council table?
Yeah, so, there, you know, mixed opinions, of course. There was certainly fair concerns about the cost. We recognize that this is a expensive initiative. Also want folks to know that administration is very committed to pursuing cost recoveries, and we are also very confident that we'll be able to attain those. There's different avenues we can pursue for those cost recoveries. There are other orders of government, so the federal and the provincial levels, with some signals already from those levels of government that there are future funding announcements coming to address encampments. There's also community organizations, sponsorship opportunities, there's local charities and foundations. So although the price tag is something to certainly be concerned about and keep top of mind, we are going to do everything we can to make sure that we are recovering as much of those costs as possible.
One thing you mentioned there is that, you know, obviously the village is sort of the cornerstone of this. This is a big piece of dealing with designated encampments. What are some of the other priorities that you want to highlight from the plan?
So we are endeavoring to establish a people with lived experience advisory committee. We know through working with community partners that the people who are most impacted by these decisions have the most expertise in this area. So the people with lived experience advisory committee will be established from people who either have current living experience being in an encampment or have previously lived in an encampment, and they will be integrated throughout the process to make sure that we're doing things in the best way possible and making good decisions that will have good outcomes.
Where does this set us up for the future? Where do we go from here?
So our next immediate steps as administration is to do some public consultations. There's three main consultation efforts planned. We are engaging with the Fort William Business Improvement Association board today. Then we have a public survey that we'll be launching today as well. That'll be open for 1 week. And then we are also going to create some infographic or pamphlet brochure style leaflets to distribute to surrounding neighbors and businesses in the areas of those two proposed locations, inviting them to a drop-in session. In the future, those public communication and education efforts will continue. They will be very key to making sure folks are aware of what this village is and what this village is not, and fostering buy-in, because the village is really good for the broader community as well, not just the residents that live there. We see great successes from other communities in the realm of cleanliness, public safety, public health improvements. So as we move forward, that public communication and education will really be a strong focal point.
Riley, appreciate you coming in today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Riley Willen, and she is the drug strategy specialist with the city, and she joined me here in the Minute Studio. And a big thanks for listening to the Minutes this week. Of course, if you want more information about City Council, agendas, or minutes, just visit thunderbay.ca/council. If you want to listen to past episodes or maybe provide some feedback, visit thunderbay.ca/theminutes. You can also find the Minutes wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, you can find us on YouTube and on our website as well. It's thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. I'm Jeff Walters. Thanks for listening this week. We'll chat again next week. Make it a great day.